I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Fulton v. the City of Philadelphia is a much-anticipated U.S. Supreme Court ruling about religious freedom, LGBTQ rights, and foster children that will have national implications no matter what the court decides. The city ended its contract with Catholic Social Services when it learned the agency would not consider same-sex couples as foster parents. It argued that CSS's policy violated Philadelphia's ordinance that bans discrimination based on race and sexual orientation. Now, CSS filed a lawsuit against the city with two foster parents, Sharon L. Fulton and Tony Sims Bush, claiming the city violated their religious freedom when it severed the contract because of their and the church's opposition to homosexuality. CSS does not certify unmarried and same-sex couples as foster parents. Nationwide, there are hundreds of thousands of children in the foster care system, and the court is expected to rule sometime this month. We have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. David Cohen is a professor at Drexel University's Thomas R. Klein School of Law, co-author of a book that came out about a year ago called Obstacle Course, The Everyday Struggle to Get an Abortion in America. David Cohen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much. Good to see you, Marty.
Nice to see you as well. And also with us, Michael Moreland. He's a professor of law and religion and director of the Eleanor H. McCullen Center for Law, Religion, and Public Policy at Villanova University's Charles Widger School of Law. Michael Moreland, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well. Nice to have you both with us. Can we just all agree, before we get into some of the disagreements and how you view this case, that to you, David Cohen, this is an important case and it's a complicated case?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a decision from the court yet, even though the case was argued in early November. And I think that's because it's so complicated and because it's so important. The Supreme Court tends to save high-profile, hot-button issue cases for the end of June, and I think that's what we're looking at with this case. We're not going to get a decision until the end of this month.
And why is it important, Michael Moreland?
Well, it raises issues at the intersection of religious freedom and LGBT rights, anti-discrimination principles. And the facts in the case, as we'll probably have a chance to talk about, are messy. It's a complicated record, and there are various kind of technical questions in the case. So I think partly there's probably a deep division in the court about the bigger principles at stake here, but I also think it's probably just hard to kind of figure out how to square it with all the facts here.
Well, let's talk about some of the facts as best we understand it, and I'll start with you, David. Philadelphia has a non-discrimination clause, and it applies apparently across the board. It severed this contract with Catholic Social Services because it would not or could not or will not abide by this anti-discrimination clause. Can you help us dig a little deeper into that?
Yeah, so Philadelphia prohibits discrimination based on sexual orientation as part of their Fair Practices Ordinance, but also as part of a clause that it inserts into contracts with contractors. And, you know, every government has lots of contracts. And so they insert this clause, and it's part of the clauses that it has with foster care agencies. And so Catholic Social Services is not going to abide by that because it goes against their religious beliefs. And so the city says that if you're not going to follow the contractual obligation, that's part of what we make you sign as be a part of this system, we're no longer going to have the contract with you. So that's really the crux of it, this requirement that Philadelphia imposes as part of its contracts.
Well, and it has contracts with a number of agencies besides Catholic Social Services for foster care.
Right. And so Philadelphia's argument is that this is generally applicable because we apply this not only to the religious foster care agency that we know doesn't agree with our stance on sexual orientation, but we apply it to everyone. And so the crux of their argument, the city's argument, is that because this is generally applicable, and we'll get into the idea of neutrality too, but this, yes, that it's generally applicable, we apply it to everyone, that we shouldn't have to grant a religious exemption.
Well, give us what the argument was from Catholic Social Services, and they are also representing, or also their two foster mothers who are part of this this court case as well.
Right. The CSS side of the argument is that they've been providing foster care in Philadelphia for over a century, and they were in this space long before the city took it over, and that in essence the city can't come in, take over the charitable work of an entity like the Catholic Church, and then kick out the Catholic Church from providing that charitable service because of the city's view of the anti-discrimination rules that are applicable. Their view is that an unmarried heterosexual couple or a same-sex couple are inconsistent with the church's understanding of what a family should be. There are plenty of other agencies that would do those placements, but the Catholic Social Services doesn't want to do that. And that because no same-sex couples ever came to CSS and sought placement, there is really no harm here. And that in essence, the city is insisting on enforcing this anti-discrimination rule in a sort of selective way.
As they have made the argument that no one has come to them, no same-sex couple has actually applied to be certified to be a foster parent. But if you have a clause that discriminates but you don't apply it, are you still discriminating?
Right. And that's obviously the city's rejoinder to that argument is that if it were to happen, sure, Catholic Social Services says they would refer the couple to an agency that would place them, but that there would be a kind of a stigma or a dignitary harm by virtue of that. But another point here is that the CSS also makes the argument, though, that, as I said, the city is being selective in how it's doing this because it actually allows other agencies to engage in what they would call discrimination on other grounds, but so that's why it's a selective targeting of Catholic Social Services.
What are the grounds, though? That's important.
Well, so the Fair Practices Ordinance says, for example, that you can't discriminate based on disability, marital status, race, and so forth, and that, in fact, foster care agencies do engage in an assessment of, say, disability when deciding whether a family is fit to receive foster children, engages in an inquiry about marital status, and maybe even in the placement setting engages in not exactly racial discrimination, but takes race into account. And that because of that, it undermines the city's interest then in saying, well, but Catholic Social Services, you can't deny certification to a same-sex couple.
We'll pick up on that. Does this get to this issue about applying things equally, applying ordinances equally?
Right. Under the current Supreme Court precedent, which we'll talk about, a law has to be generally applicable and neutral. And so the idea of neutrality is what we're getting at here, this idea that is the city of Philadelphia targeting Catholic Social Services because of its religious beliefs? And so Catholic Social Services' argument is that because they claim the city allows these other forms of discrimination, these other exceptions, that it's not neutral, that they're really targeting CSS when they allow this. Now, the city is saying that we don't allow discrimination in who is allowed to be a foster parent, but we do allow considerations of race, disability, and some other things in placing, so that maybe we want to place a black child with black parents because of concerns about how they're going to grow up and thinking about race. And we do allow some of those adjustments or considerations in placement, but not in who the agencies work with.
Well, and that's, even though that seems complicated, that's important, that there is the pool stage and then there is the placement stage. You're nodding your head, Michael.
Right. I'm an expert on constitutional law and free exercise. This is a very complicated area of family law. But, right, there's a two-stage process where there's a certification by the foster care agency that a family would be a fit home for foster kids. And then there's the placement stage. And, again, it gets technical, but some of the fight here is about can you engage in discrimination at the certification stage, as the city says CSS is doing, but still allow some adjustment in particular circumstances at the placement stage.
Let me pick up, and I'll toss it to you, David, something that I put to Michael, which is that if you have a policy that does discriminate, I mean, CSS says we are not going to consider foster parents who are same-sex couples or even unmarried couples, but we're talking about same-sex couples, that if you have a policy that in a sense discriminates, but you never use it because no one ever applies, is that still discriminatory?
I mean, yeah, it sends a message. I mean, Michael talked about dignitary harm, but it also, maybe there's a reason people aren't coming to CSS because they know they're going to be turned away. And if, you know, there's a Catholic who's gay or lesbian And they only know this foster care agency. And then they shy away from going there because they know they're going to be treated in this discriminatory way. Maybe they won't go anywhere else. So it can scare people away. But it also is, I mean, here in Philadelphia, we have a lot of other foster care agencies, but other places might not. And so at a in a different locale that doesn't have the broad diversity of foster care agencies and placement agencies that we have here, it could have much bigger ramifications.
There was another agency, Bethany Christian Services, was a party at least until a couple of months ago. They decided to change their policy, change their mind, and agreed to screen same-sex couples.
They did, right. And, you know, it points out the issue that a lot of these cases raise, which is who decides, right? A lot of these constitutional law questions are about who gets to decide. For example, in the context of Catholic social services, what their views of marriage and family should be. And the Bethany agency decided that they would go ahead and screen same-sex couples. Catholic social services could change their policy too, but right. I guess the First Amendment point from CSS's perspective is that that's their decision to make, not something that should be forced on them by the city of Philadelphia.
But help us understand, and you teach at a Catholic university, so help us understand the opposition to same-sex couples or marriage, and it is legal with Obergefell, within the confines and the doctrine of the Catholic Church?
Well, it's complicated. I mean, so Villanova, for example, is a Catholic university, as you say, but has sexual orientation and its non-discrimination provision as a university. But they don't solemnize same-sex marriages at the Villanova Church. So within the church, there's, I think, a strong recognition of the rights of gays and lesbians not to be discriminated against, to be valued. But at the same time, the church has views about its sacramental life and about marriage as being between a man and a woman that, at least in the context of, say, solemnizing marriages in the Catholic Church, or in this context, dealing with same-sex couples for purposes of foster care placement, the church is saying that's something that we don't want to be part of.
But same-sex marriage, because of Obergefell, I think it was 6 years ago, David, makes same-sex marriage legal under constitutional protections.
Right, and the city of Philadelphia is never going to tell a church that doesn't want to bless a same-sex marriage. They have to do that. That's part of the private religious world. But when what the city's saying and what the argument here is about, when you enter the public life, when you enter the civic sphere of participating in the foster care process, which they don't have to, but when they do, they are agreeing, so the city's trying to claim, you are agreeing to participate by our rules. Stay doing what you want to do when you're talking about church activity, but you want to participate in foster care, you have to follow our rules.
And there's money involved in this, too. I mean, there's a contract worth millions of dollars.
Yeah, I mean, that's part, if you want the money from the city of Philadelphia to flow as part of doing this work, then yeah, you have to follow our anti-discrimination rules, which includes in the city sexual orientation. It's an option for the church to do this or not. And the church wants to, as the city sees it, have it both ways. They want to get this money, participate in this public service, the civic life, but also follow their private religious practices.
Well, we're going to take a very short break and get back to our conversation. We're talking about a case that was argued a number of months ago before the U.S. Supreme Court, Fulton v. City of Philadelphia. We're expecting a decision any day now. Frankly, it's a case involving issues of religious liberty and LGBTQ rights. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane talking with our guests about Fulton v. City of Philadelphia. The U.S. Supreme Court is weighing whether the city was allowed to cancel a contract with Catholic Social Services for refusing to screen same-sex couples as potential foster parents, or if the agency's religious beliefs give them the right to exclude gay and lesbian couples. Many people are watching this decision as a kind of bellwether for how this conservative conservative majority court views LGBTQ civil rights. Joining us, Michael Moreland. He's a professor of law and religion at Villanova University, and David Cohen, professor of law at Drexel University. And we want to hear from you. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We want to know your opinion about this potential opinion coming from the U.S. Supreme Court. I guess this is the time where I can mention the word Smith. This is, I mean, I felt like I wanted to lead up to this. This was a Supreme Court decision written by Justice Scalia, David, which is seems to be kind of at the heart of what this decision could be about.
Right. This was a Justice Scalia decision from 1990, Employment Division versus Smith, where we had a Native American man who was fired from his job for smoking peyote, and he claimed that that was part of his religious practices. He was denied unemployment insurance, claiming that I was doing something protected by my religion, so I can't be denied unemployment insurance for doing something that's religiously protected. And so the case went to the Supreme Court, and a decision from Justice Scalia said that this is where we've been talking about generally applicable laws that are neutral. So a generally applicable law that is neutral with respect to religious practices will not be struck down as unconstitutional. The basic idea being if everyone has to apply with this law, and so the drug laws, everyone has to comply. If everyone has to comply and it's not a law that has been written to target a particular religion, then it's okay for religious people to feel a negative impact by that law on their religion because no one can smoke peyote. And so everyone has to apply with that. Now, if the law had been written and there was some evidence in the writing of the law that the reason the state prohibits the smoking of peyote is to harm Native American religious people,
right,
even though it would apply to everyone, that would be a problem because that is not neutral. That is targeting the religion. But a generally applicable law that is neutral with respect to religion, the court says that does not violate the free exercise clause of the Constitution.
Is that what we're talking about here in Philadelphia, Fulton v. City of Philadelphia?
Right. It's a question about whether, one question is whether Smith should be overruled, actually. That's an issue that was raised by the plaintiffs in this case. They think that the whole framework of Smith should be jettisoned in favor of some other approach more protective of religious free exercise. But as David says, the core of the Smith test is this idea of neutrality and general applicability. And CSS argues that the city was not neutral, that there were some statements in the record about things from city council members and the commissioner in this case that evinced a hostility towards CSS. So in that respect, listeners may recall it's a little bit like Masterpiece Cake Shop 2.0. Masterpiece Cake Shop was the case in which the court said that because of some statements that evinced a certain element of bias in the decision making by the state, that therefore it violated free exercise. But then as to the general applicability point, CSS argues that the fact that you've created some exemptions here, so to speak, exemptions for taking into account disability and so forth, means that it's not generally applicable and that the presence of those exemptions means that you have to give an exemption here as well.
You want go ahead, David.
This is why this case is so complicated.
I was going to say, and this is why it's so complicated.
I mean, Michael just covered, this case could come down saying it wasn't a neutral law. It could come down saying it wasn't a generally applicable law. Or it could come down saying we're going to get rid of the Smith case altogether. And so we've got these different levels. And right now, since the court hasn't decided it, we're all engaging in speculation about what it might do. But it seems like, and maybe Michael can add a fifth option, but it seems like the options for the court are to allow the city to keep imposing this anti-discrimination rule, or rule for Catholic social services one of three ways, saying it's not a neutral law, it's not a generally applicable law, or we're just going to get rid of the Smith framework altogether and say that the city has violated free exercise principles by doing what it's doing and just get rid of this test from Smith from 1990.
Would you add anything to that, Michael?
Well, just that interestingly, at the same time that Fulton has been pending, the court has also been deciding these emergency petitions about COVID restrictions on worship. And in that context, again, it gets very technical and we don't want to lose any listeners.
But it gets, or the host.
it gets technical about, you know, if you're exempting some things, so if you let casinos be open but not churches at a certain capacity, does that raise a constitutional problem? And so I think what we'll see in Fulton is the court trying as best they can to kind of try to resolve some of this in a way that I suspect will be in CSS's favor, but the precise framework for it, I think, is yet to be seen.
But you think they will, as you look into your crystal ball, rule for Catholic social services in Philadelphia?
I think so. I think there is enough. It's always hard. I've made these predictions, I think, on this show,
in fact,
about
yes.
in other cases, and sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. But I think there is enough evidence at oral argument, just given the composition of the court, that I think, even maybe perhaps from moderate justices like Justice Kagan, for example, who has tended over her career to be quite protective of free exercise, enough evidence there that there's at least something here for CSS to hang on to.
And you're nodding your head.
Yeah, I agree. I think the city is probably going to lose, and Catholic social services will win. It's just a matter of to what extent. And I think at oral argument, there was a sense that it might be a narrow victory for Catholic social services. Oral argument took place in early November, just after Justice Barrett took the court. And so there was a sense that the oral argument made it seem like they were trying to thread a needle in a bunch of different places. But these COVID cases have come down since then, and it seems like the court is taking more and more expansive views about free exercise of religion. In fact, some people think that these COVID cases have implicitly overruled Employment Division versus Smith, and that the court is in these are emergency appeals. They're not even having full argument. It's a really weird posture. But in these cases that are emergency appeals without full argument, the court has shifted free exercise doctrine in a way that is more protective of religion and basically telling states that if you have any exceptions to a law, you have to have a religious exception to the law, which is a big change. And it seems like that's where the court may have already gone and will apply that in Fulton. And if that's the case, that's a much bigger change than threading the needle like it seemed at oral argument. So 6 months ago, I would have said that it would be a narrow decision, but I think it's going to be a pretty broad decision in favor of Catholic social services at this point.
And I do want to get to the implications, but here we are. It's almost half after the hour, and we haven't talked about children. I mean, we're talking about foster children. I think I was reading there something like 400,000 foster children in the foster care system being taken care of, or perhaps they're in group homes. I'm looking at you, Michael Moreland. I mean, how do we factor in the best interest of the child? And was that something that the court even broached?
Well, they certainly talked about it within the framework of the legal issues in this case, the best interests of the child and decisions about placement. Of course, CSS makes the argument that it really is a purely ideological move here on the part of the city, because the city needs the help of these foster care agencies. And an agency that had such a long track record and a very successful track record like CSS, it was kind of a pure ideological move on the part of the city to kick them out of the program, given their record of success and given the foster care crisis in the city.
I was reading that UCLA Williams Institute that 3% of same-sex couples are raising a foster child.
Yeah, and there's a large percentage of kids in foster care who are LGBT because they've been kicked out of their homes because of problems when they come out. And so in order to, you know, part of the city's argument is that we need to create a foster care system that is friendly and accepting of LGBT kids. And part of that is possibly placing them with LGBT parents who can raise them in a way that they will not fear any ramifications because of their identity. And so there's a disproportionate number of kids who need this kind of sexual orientation affirming and accepting placement.
How do you see that, Michael?
I acknowledge the difficult issues there, and again, CSS's position in the case, such as I understand it, is that they readily refer same-sex couples that come to them, if any had, they would refer them to an agency that would deal with them, and that they would also take into account the needs of LGBT kids who might be in the system as well. That really, that the point here was just that there's no harm here to either the kids or to the prospective parents because of how CSS's practices were actually implemented on the ground.
You see it that way?
I mean, I think the facts here in Philadelphia indicate that there are plenty of other options, although I think there are the unknowns of people who don't go to CSS but don't know of other options, or kids who are working with them who might not be out and have concerns about their safety and acceptance. But I think the broader implications in other places where there might be agencies like CSS that dominate the foster care services That's really concerning.
Because we have so many agencies.
Yeah,
I think there's something like 30 operating within the city. Here are a bunch of comments here. One from Barbara. She says, Philadelphia Catholic Social Services is being represented by the powerful and well-resourced D.C. Beckett Legal Group. Do you know whether the diocese sought them as counsel, or did Beckett Fund come forward to make a national case example of this? I'm tossing that to you, Michael Moreland.
Well, Beckett represents religious freedom plaintiffs in a wide variety of contexts. They represent Muslim prisoners, and they represent churches and other organizations. So, I mean, I think, you know, and they raise money from donors, but I think that, look, they have a principal position here about religious free exercise, and the fact that it happens to be a Catholic institution in this context, I think, is, you know, really is maybe a little beside the point.
Well, and Neil, just to balance things out, David, Neil Katyal, who I think if people watch, you know, cable news, they see him on cable news, represented the city of Philadelphia.
Yeah, he was the Solicitor General at some point, interim Solicitor General during the Obama years. And he argued the case before the Supreme Court. It's not uncommon to get high profile advocates to argue a case before the Supreme Court, but the city lawyers worked this case from the beginning, and they've been the ones who really took this case. Neil Katyal was the one who just presented it to the justices.
And it's interesting because this has obviously made its way through the courts to get to the U.S. Supreme Court. And David, the lower courts ruled in favor of the city. Does that tell us anything?
Yes and no. I mean, I think one thing it tells us is the strength of Employment Division versus Smith. I mean, that case, now 30 years old, written by very conservative Justice Scalia, really laid down a marker and said that as long as you really aren't targeting a religion, these laws can apply to religious entities. And so the lower courts are bound by that. And the lower courts, for the most part, take that seriously and they follow that. The Supreme Court's not bound by that. The Supreme Court can change things. They can wiggle out of it. They can completely overturn it. So I'm not surprised about the lower court rulings. And yet we both think the Supreme Court's going to rule the other way.
Well, let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's David Cohen. He's a professor at Drexel University's Thomas R. Klein School of Law. Also with us, Michael Moreland. He's a professor of law, religion, and public policy, and a whole bunch of things at Villanova University's Charles Widger School of Law. And again, we are talking about this case. It was argued last fall before the U.S. Supreme Court, Fulton v. City of Philadelphia, and we are expecting a decision within the next couple of weeks before the end of the month. It's a case involving religious liberty, LGBTQ rights, and foster children. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Here's a question from Gregory. Did the justices give any indication which way they are potentially leaning? Michael Moreland, did you hear anything that revealed their thinking?
Well, certain questions were, I think, genuinely seeking to kind of clarify some difficult aspects of the record. That's to be sure. But I do think some of the justices also indicated some pretty strong sympathy. I would point Justice Sotomayor, for example, I think had a pretty strong set of questions about, well, in a government contracting relationship, basically, shouldn't the government be able to structure that as it wishes? And then maybe on the other side, you had some of the conservative justices making some of the arguments that the Beckett Fund lawyers were also making.
And these new justices that are sitting on the court, let's start with Coney Barrett. Did you hear anything in particular, David, from her?
I thought at oral argument, she seemed like she was trying to thread the needle, like I said before, trying to come up with some way to rule for Catholic social services but not overturn the apple cart with free exercise cases. It's Justices Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, not so much in oral argument, but really in the COVID cases, have been really, I don't love this word, but strident in terms of defending the free exercise in light of the pandemic, right? I mean, these were regulations that the state of New York, state of California were imposing in light of the fact that, you know, so many people were getting sick and dying. And Gorsuch and Kavanaugh in particular wrote separate opinions in various cases. I mean, we're talking about a lot of cases here.
Right.
They wrote various opinions where they saw very little wiggle room for the state to impose on religious entities. And so it is hard to count. I mean, in constitutional law, right, we have principles, we have the law, but we also have the number five. There are nine justices, and you have to count to five. And so for the city of Philadelphia to count to five is almost impossible math. Because Justice Alito, he was another one in oral argument. We know where he's going to rule. He's going to rule for Catholic social services, and Justice Thomas the same. Given what Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh have written in their COVID cases, it's impossible to see them ruling for Philadelphia. And given Barrett, I think that's also true. So I think it's almost automatic five for Catholic social services. It's just a matter of where they come together to write a decision.
Hmm.
And I think the Chief Justice Roberts, who under his court, religious freedom cases have won 80% of the time. Before him, it was 50%. So his court, and he in particular, has been very favorable to these claims of religious exemption. And I haven't even added him to the math here, right? We don't even, whether he's going to try to moderate, I mean, if he's in the majority, he gets to assign the opinion. So maybe he will join the majority and then try to write a more moderating opinion. But I don't know if he'll be able to keep the others on board.
And you mentioned Sotomayor, Kagan, that'd be Breyer. That's the three that are left, right, Michael?
That's right. And you heard from them a few times. You also heard from Justice Kavanaugh at one point, kind of trying to see if there's a compromise here. I think Justice Kavanaugh had a question where he said, look, you have First Amendment free exercise rights. You have LGBT anti-discrimination rights. Shouldn't we try to find win-win solutions in this area rather than kind of zero-sum solutions? So you saw that. I think you also saw another interesting set of questions from Justice Barrett, for example, who David was mentioning. She raised the hypothetical of, well, what would happen if the government took over the provision of, say, hospital services and then put conditions on it, such as requiring that hospitals perform abortion? So kind of trying to point out the argument that if the government comes in, takes over an area of charitable activity, and then imposes requirements, what limits are there on that? So, but I think you also, though, heard from some of them an effort to say, is there a way of kind of turning down the volume and de-escalating some of these fights in a way that would be better for our constitutional system than these fights that we're having now?
We have to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. And we are talking about a really important case. It involves the city of Philadelphia. It involves Catholic social services and foster children. It's called Fulton v. City of Philadelphia. And again, our guests are David Cohen. He's a professor at Drexel University's Thomas R. Klein School of Law. Michael Moreland, professor of law and religion, director of the Eleanor H. McCullen Center for Law, Religion, and Public Policy at Villanova University's Charles Widger School of Law. We're going to take that very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We've got a lot more comments coming in as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about a U.S. Supreme Court decision that should come down within the next couple of weeks before the end of June. It's a case that involves LGBTQ rights and religious liberty. It's called Fulton v. City of Philadelphia. And again, it issues whether the city was within its rights to cancel a contract with Catholic Social Services because the agency refused to screen same-sex couples to be foster parents. Philadelphia's policy that organizations get city funding may not discriminate against same-sex couples applies at least reportedly to both religious and non-religious organizations. CSS has been a longtime provider of social services and argue that ending their contract with the city is a violation of religious freedom. And again, we want to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us, WHYY Radio Times, and you can give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Issa says, I think the idea of making decisions about the lives of children based on religion without their say is disturbing. A comment from Marianne, CSS's mission is to, quote, support the child and the child's best interest. However, if the child determines for themselves they are LGBTQ, they might not be supported in their adolescent rights, so the policy will inadvertently negatively influence, impact children they support. Do you want to take that one?
I think that that's a little unfair to CSS's work in this area. I think that, as I indicated earlier, I think that they obviously have this policy about placements with unmarried couples or same-sex couples, but I think that their record is actually quite long and quite favorable with regard to placing all kinds of different kids, including LGBT kids, and treating them with dignity and respect.
You both seem to indicate that you think the court is going to rule in favor of Catholic social services in one form or another. David, what are the implications for that? And give us a scenario. You're the professor here. Both of you are.
It really depends how broad the court's ruling is. At its broadest, I mean, I'm going to read a quote from Justice Scalia from the 1990 case. He said, any society adopting such a system, the system Catholic social services wants, would be courting anarchy. But that danger increases in direct proportion to the society's diversity of religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. What he's basically saying is we have very diverse religious beliefs in this country. And if every religious person asks for an exemption from generally applicable laws because they claim it violates their religion, Justice Scalia says that's courting anarchy. And remember, even though the Roberts Court has ruled mostly in favor of conservative Christian religions, unlike the court before it, which was minority religions, we have religious beliefs that are conservative, that are neutral, that are liberal. And so, you know, we talked about Masterpiece Cake Shop with the bakers, conservative religious bakers who didn't want to bake for a gay wedding.
Right.
You can have liberal religious people who say, I'm an abortion doctor, and I strongly believe that according to my religious values, I have to care for a woman in a time of need. Does that doctor not have to comply with abortion restrictions? And if Roe is overturned and they work in a state that abortion is illegal, can they say, I am going to provide abortions because it's part of my religion? This is not far-fetched. There are many abortion doctors who say that this is part of their religious beliefs. We have religious beliefs that are all over the map in this country. And I do think Justice Scalia is right in saying that we're courting anarchy. If everyone, you know, the mail carrier doesn't have to deliver mail to the gay couple down the street. No, we don't have to fight fires for the interracial couple because I don't believe in interracial marriage. It's part of my religion. The list goes on.
And you think, I mean, if the court rules for Catholic social services, that opens this Pandora's box?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it depends how they rule.
Right.
But if they rule, for instance, that if there's one exception, there has to be a religious exception. Go back to abortion. There's always going to be an exception for saving the life of the woman. Well, there is an exception. Now you open it the door. Religious doctor, I want an exception for my religion. You've exempted this secular reason, which is life-saving medical care. So now exempt my religious beliefs, which is providing care to the patient in front of me because it's consistent with my religious mandate, not just beliefs.
What do you think, Michael?
I think it, David's right that, you know, we'll see sort of what the follow-on implications would be from a broad or narrow ruling in this case. On the exemptions point, I guess, you know, it gets into some technical issues about, you know, what kinds of exemptions are comparable and what kinds are not, and what kinds undermine the government's interest as much as I would say a religious exemption would. I do think on the broader point in the context of LGBT discrimination, that you do also, though, see an interesting way in which the court, maybe not purposely, but is kind of trying to find a way of declaring a truce in the culture wars, because you have Obergefell recognizing the right of same-sex marriage. A year ago, you had a decision written by Justice Gorsuch, joined by the Chief Justice, saying that the prohibition on sex and the Civil Rights Act in discrimination includes LGBT discrimination, but at the same time recognizing the rights of religious institutions and hiring mm-hmm. practices, and I suspect also in Fulton here, to a kind of civil society space to have their own views.
I mean, is it possible, you think, David, to sort of carve out this middle ground where both sort of religious beliefs can coexist with LGBTQ rights?
They might try to. I don't think you can cabinet, because if Catholic social service wins and their religious belief has to be respected, what about the people who work in the city agency who contract with Catholic social services who say it's part of my religious beliefs not to place children or work with a foster care agency that discriminates based on sexual orientation because I belong to a progressive church or synagogue or mosque that believes that that's central to our religious belief. So now as a city employee, I'm not going to comply with the Supreme Court decision because of my religious beliefs. We're going to have dueling religious beliefs that are now elevated to constitutionally protected, and this is where we get towards anarchy.
Well, this is coming in from left field, and it may make no sense whatsoever, but I'm going to do it anyway, Michael. And I saw, and then this is a headline from the New York Times, Vatican warns U.S. bishops don't deny Biden communion over abortion. We have a Catholic president who believes in, you know, his version, or some version, I guess, of Roe v. Wade. Priests or, I guess, bishops want to deny him communion because that's a violation of Catholic doctrine. The Pope is saying, give him an exception. Can we in any way apply this to what's happening in Philadelphia?
That's way above my pay grade.
Is that? Well, okay. I don't know if I feel good about that or not good about that.
I just do law.
You just do law. But, well, I think you know what I'm getting at, which is that there seem to be that religions can come up with exceptions. And religious leaders can come up with exceptions.
Well, and that's where I'd go back to my earlier point. It's a question of who decides, right? Mm-hmm. So that the church...
This is the Pope, but anyway.
Right,
yeah.
No, the church... Pope Francis said a few years ago about gay clergy, said, who am I to judge? I think that there's a way in which, again, the church wants to reaffirm the rights of gays and lesbians not to be discriminated against and treated with dignity, like I said earlier. But have at the same time its own understanding of sexuality and marriage. So, but again, those are very much importantly questions for the church to resolve, not to have the government resolve it for the church.
Go ahead, David.
What I think is interesting about your example, Marty, is it shows again just how diverse religious opinions can be. And in our country in particular, where we have so many different religions, and then within particular religions, we have so much diversity of opinion, with most of those people claiming that it is religiously rooted, right? I think President Biden thinks that his support for LGBT rights and abortion rights is based in his religion. Different view of religion than maybe a lot of other Catholics, but not a lot of, not, I mean, there are plenty of Catholics who agree. When you have so many different religiously rooted views in this country, what law will not claim to have an exemption from? People are going to claim exemptions from everything. Yeah. And they're going to say, it's my religious beliefs, and the Supreme Court will, the courts will not look into whether that is a correct view of your religion. They will look into whether you sincerely believe that. Like if you just, you know, converted the day before just to get out of this law, they'll say that's a problem. But they will not look into whether you are correctly interpreting your religion. So if someone says, this is a correct interpretation of my religion, I do not want to serve this interracial couple.
The court is not going to get
involved. In theory, the court's, you know, not supposed to get involved. And if they grant these religious exceptions, we're going down that road.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think I disagree a bit here about you know, the court, if they do go down the road of, say, narrowing Smith's reach in a case like this, there would still be applicable tests about, and again, it gets technical about kind of tiers of scrutiny and so forth. I would point out that at the level of the federal government has a statute, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, that expressly disavows Smith's approach to these questions. So in a way, Congress has been running the experiment for us for 30 years of what does it look like if you have a regime in which the government has to give exemptions in a particular kind of way in particular context. And frankly, David and I will disagree about this. I know the parade of horribles has not resulted. The federal government's still able to conduct its business, take into account the rights of religious believers, and it hasn't ended up in a world in which we have the kind of anarchy that Justice Scalia was worried about.
You want to respond to that?
I think it's true. We have not seen the parade of horribles to an extent. We have had the Hobby Lobby decision saying that employers can deny contraceptive coverage if it's inconsistent with their religious beliefs and extensions of that decision. We've had employment decisions saying that you can, if you're a religious institution, you don't have to follow age discrimination laws. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I think the more cases like this will give greater blessing to people to ask for this. And then on top of that, the federal government only touches on our lives in so many ways. State and local governments touch on our lives in all sorts of ways that go way beyond. And that's where you're going to see these requests for exemptions in prisons, in service delivery for city and local governments, in employment. It's going to be endless.
You mentioned animus, I mean, hostility towards religion. And that's obviously an important factor in this decision. Is being critical of a religion, is that how does the court decide what animus is? I mean, you're allowed to criticize a religion. Is that hostility or is it just being critical?
Well, it's a very kind of murky area of constitutional doctrine. Given the court's decision in Masterpiece Cake Shop and how they resolved it there was that these statements by these commissioners on the Colorado board evinced a measure of animus. But how you kind of smoke out the motive and whether it rises to the level of animosity or bias that's sufficient to violate free exercise, I think that's a much harder question. And as I said earlier, there's a way of resolving this case that would make it a follow-on to Masterpiece Cake Shop that would be kind of very fact-based about statements by the commissioner and so forth. But then it would put off a lot of the bigger questions to another day.
Quick comment there?
Yeah, I mean, Masterpiece Cake Shop, like Michael just said, really put off the big issue. And it was seen at the time, I mean, Justice Kennedy was still on the court, Justice Ginsburg was on the court, so we had another liberal, we had another moderate, that they really were trying to accommodate the different wings of the court. We don't seem to have that right now, right? We have six conservative Republicans on the court. Even Chief Justice Roberts, who's seen as in the middle, he's very conservative, and you don't even have to have him to count to five conservatives on the court. So he's almost extraneous. We could see this very fact-based decision, and I'm not ruling it out, not at all. But it seems more and more likely that we're going to have a stronger opinion in favor of Catholic social services with the justices we've talked about going even further. I think it's less likely that they'll rule on this idea of neutrality, and if they are going to avoid going all the way, rule on this idea of general applicability and say, as if you have one exemption in the legal world, it's called most favored nation status. If you have one exemption, you have to have an exemption for religion because religion, because of the First Amendment, is the most favored exception. So one exception, religion also has to be there. So that, to me, seems the most likely ruling because that's how all the COVID cases have gone or the more recent COVID cases have gone. But they could also just go all the way and get rid of Smith.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Let me just read a comment from Marianne. She writes, a desperate woman who finds herself unable to care for her child and is forced to give permission to another family should have the right to request that her child be raised in a family with Catholic values. I'm tossing that to you, Michael. You agree?
My understanding is that those kinds of private placement of adoptions are not the issue in this case. This case is about the foster care system, kids who are abused and neglected and taken away from their families and become wards of the state. What kinds of agencies can participate in that program? So it's really not relevant, though, to those more private settings.
Right. And just in response to what David was saying, we're almost out of time here. Just final thoughts from you, Michael.
Well, I think that there's a way in which the best of the American tradition is one that tries to recognize the rights of religious believers, notwithstanding anti-discrimination rules and other kinds of protections. And that, as was suggested earlier, I think that trying to find a solution here that can protect both sides most adequately is the way of achieving some measure of social peace and not the kind of all-out war of everyone against everyone that I think we've seen in some of these fights.
Do you think that's possible?
Well,
to find that sweet spot?
I think a year ago I would have thought that's where the court was going to go. I think the court with the COVID decisions, the addition of Justice Barrett, seems like it's going to go further and be more radically in favor of conservative Christianity, which is what the Roberts Court has done repeatedly. So I think this decision could be quite an upheaval in the law.
Well, you have given us a lot to talk about and think about. Thank you both for joining us today on Radio Times. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Marty. And David Cohen, professor, Drexel University's Thomas R. Klein School of Law, co-author of Obstacle Course, The Everyday Struggle to Get an Abortion in America. Michael Moreland is a professor of law and religion, director of the Eleanor H. McCullen Center for Law, Religion, and Public Policy at Villanova University's Charles Widger School of Law. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. And you can always download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, Kelsey Hansen, and Paige Murray-Bessler. I'm Artie Moscowane. Thank you for joining us.